Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's take a minute to hear about today's sponsors.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct a hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, Red Wave Technology is a Homeland Security company focused exclusively on bringing innovative solutions to the problems that first responders face. The introduction of the Threat ID allows for identification of solids, liquids, and gases through the interchangeable sampling modules. And this identification of gases includes VOCs, toxic industrial chemicals, and it remains one of the largest gaps in our hazmat toolbox. The Threat ID bridges that gap and provides an identification of toxic, dangerous gases with the same ease that FTIR has brought to solids and liquids. For more information, check out redwavetech.com.
Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hazmat Guys. I'm Bobby Salvison, and I'm here with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. We're here.
We are here.
96. Incredible.
What was the statistic that very few podcasts even go past, like, seven?
Yeah, it was seven. I think the vast majority of podcasts go until like seven, and like 5% make it to 100.
Wow.
But you know what? Like nowadays, like if you look at any news shows or guys that do daily type things, I mean, they're banging out hundreds a year. So it's kind of, I don't know. I think we're doing pretty good.
I think we're doing all right. I mean, at least we've got stuff that is relevant and not just like, I don't know, people talking about movies or just something totally stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So conferences, I actually just talked to two of the conference guys today, Massachusetts and Cold Zone, and those two things are shaking. They're
nice.
Happening.
Nice.
In person.
Nice. And I know Virginia's on the way. We're going to make sure that we are present to some degree, at least
yes.
Each one of them, probably in duo for Massachusetts.
Yes. I wouldn't miss it for the world. So.
No. I missed it for COVID.
Yes, that is true. And we can't have that again. So unless Delta variant be damned.
Delta.
Delta.
Delta's going to doom us.
Oh, forget it. Enough. So in this episode, once again, 296, we are coming back from a recent trip to another planet.
Yeah, definitely seemingly. Another planet.
Seemingly another planet, and we had to take together a class in order to be able to do another part-time job for us.
Right. To get certified in that state to
yes.
teach.
Yes, and it was interesting.
It was intense.
It was intense.
Neither this podcast, this episode is not about like the good and the bad of that system. So no. What it is we kind of sat there and we started talking. We're like, wow, like it was a lot. It was a lot. It was all regulations. All regulations.
Right.
Like imagine a 16-hour class on regulations.
Yes.
And we kind of looked at each other and we were like, you know, this is very similar to how we view SOPs and GOPs, right? Like, it's good to have guidelines. How far is too far?
Mm-hmm.
When is something that's written a hindrance to your operation or to your teaching or to your program? And it's just kind of something that we wanted to chat about.
Yeah, there was a couple of style things that I don't know if I would have done as the instructor. And it's not, again, it's not against the instructors or anything, because they were energetic. And
for the material, you know, that was being taught, that could have been a nightmare class.
You know, that's the funny part, is like we're two instructors that teach probably one of the driest topics of hazmat, and we're going, boy, that was rough. You know, it's like exponential. It's like logarithmic.
Well, because I can turn around and I can make vapor pressure interesting, right? I can't make regulation 2496.
Right.
Point one, paragraph F. Like, interesting.
Oh, God.
They did a really good job. I think they did a good job teaching the material at hand.
Yes. And if the instructor ever hears, I'm going to go into a 3-minute tirade about one thing that kind of bothered me with just the class, is that, I'm a self-taught aficionado of teaching, methodology.
Engagement.
Okay. Yeah, engagement, right? And one of the cardinal things is you cannot walk into a class of 25 people that you don't know and they don't know you, and immediately start with a social contract that is large, meaning that when you walk in, and for those of you that are watching us on video, because you should be, and check us on the YouTube channel, you'll see what I'm actually doing, is I will do something like this. And it's something as basic as like, who here likes to breathe? Right. I'm putting up my hand. I'm giving you a visual nod, and I'm telling you, and we're starting with, I just want you, I'm going to get 100% of you to say yes to this. It's very, very difficult to start off with 25 people that don't know each other to start going, okay, we're going to play bingo, and you're going to go around and introduce yourself to everybody and find out who drank last night and who knows, like, you know, six derivatives of a hydrocarbon. It was the first thing we did.
Right.
And that's a difficult jump to do as an instructor, because people are like, I don't even know where I'm sitting yet. Like, and I'm getting thrown into a bingo game. So again, that's just me. I agree with you.
That I give them an E for effort, right? Because it is a great thing to do. Just not at that time, right? Had it been the second day, right? If he had started that class off the second day, the first day was like, everybody introduce themselves. Give me something about your personality. Give me something interesting.
What's your hobby?
And then be like, all right, you've worked with these people for 8 hours yesterday. Now figure out who would get this list.
Yes, I like that.
That, and then it would have been a little bit more engaged. It would have, you know, there would have been more social interaction. We would have bought in a little bit more. Listen, everything can be improved.
Right. So the content was broken up interestingly. It was in four major parts, if memory serves.
Yes, four major parts, and then two or three like little tiny subsections that dealt with hazardous materials.
Right, and again, I'm going off my memory. It was like, what curriculum, what criteria you need to be an instructor. Like, we'll start with that one, which I honestly really liked. They place emphasis on standardization, competency, so that everything is given in an equal fashion. That was, I think, the underlying theme the whole time was every class, regardless of who or what you are, is going to be given the same way.
Yeah.
Which all too often is, well, I got my slide deck,
Right.
And you got your slide deck.
Yeah. Or, and just from a, like, mutual aid perspective, that so makes sense that you want people to be all on the same page, right? Like, but there is also kind of a part to play in, all right, so that standardization is nice, right? But when you start dealing with a huge area, and I mean like huge area, that standardization then diminishes the ability to specialize
in something local.
In something local.
Yeah, and that's one of the things for our main job. There are many engine companies or pumpers for where you might be. and they throw water, if you don't know what an engine is. But I'm joking. I'm totally making sense. But each one is the same rig. Every single one has the bolts in the same spots. The every single thing is done the same. However, if you go to different parts of our area, they are very, very different because they deal with different types of emergencies in those areas. And therefore, like Mike says, having their whole thing was you cannot take content out. You can add content to.
Right.
So the old way, from what I understand from people that have gone through before us, was you must teach at least 80% of it, which means you can take out 20% of, you know, cave lighting. Like, I don't do a lot of cave lighting. I'm sorry. I live on an island. I don't really do a lot of that. So, but if you live in cave country, by all means, put it in there and maybe add more.
Right.
But if you live next to a refinery, there, you know, maybe there's not enough of that in there. So, like, I don't think I would like a little bit more flexibility to add that local flavor in. I don't think they had as much as they should have. But again, you're talking about the flavor of the content. I'm kind of paralleling this with the chain is governed by the weakest link. And if your instructor is the weakest link, then you need to have a strong component of class.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can, but you can turn around and you can have the regulations dictate the strength of the instructor and the credentials of
which
the instructor,
did.
Which it did, like very specifically. It was like, we demand like really top notch, you know, out of the instructors. And then, but also why have a top-notch instructor? Why demand a top-notch instructor and then say, you must show every PowerPoint and you must teach this information? Right? Like, right. In this manner, stick to the book. The answers are in the book. If you go over the book, they'll get it fine on the test. I think that's a conflict. I think that
you like to just riff.
Right.
Right. So let's say, and I think they were pretty, the funny thing is they were pretty flexible about it without being flexible. The book is very specific. If Mike goes and he just says, I'm not even turning on the PowerPoint, I'm just going to bang this home and I will hit 85, 90% of it off the top of my head. Right. And then he doesn't open up that PowerPoint, technically you're in violation. Whereas if you opened it and then go click, 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 and you flip through the thing and you go, oh, I forgot this one point, then you'll be good.
Right, and I do that a lot. If I have specific stuff, I'll be like, oh, I missed that point. Let's talk about that.
Right, and I would be comfortable with that. But I'm speaking strictly, we're kind of delving into the content of the class. I'm trying to stay into the who is allowed to teach. That was very hard.
Okay, so why don't you go through those credentials?
They were mostly the same, except for 1 week.
The one that was like, you got to have like a bachelor's in science.
Yeah, you need to have a bachelor's, a master's, or a doctorate. Or you need to have a couple of semesters, I don't remember if it was two or maybe more, a couple of semesters of advanced chemistry with a passing grade, and notice those operative words, and an or. So you need to have both the bachelor's, and you need to have, you need to have either one of the degrees or multiple semesters of advanced chemistry, and 80 hours of presenting that chemistry stuff in front of somebody that's going to, like, basically vouch
critique
for you.
Right, critique you.
Yeah. So that's a high bar to hit, because and this is – you have to have a bachelor's or better in chemistry.
Or life science. Yeah, some kind of life science. Yeah.
So, like, that is – how many freaking nerds go to school for chemistry?
Not a lot. Not firefighters that become
instructors and that have experience.
Right.
So, like, you know, like, do I want the most experienced guys that are just tactically brilliant, but he's exempted from this class? And I'm not even getting started on the content of the class, because that's a whole another thing. That is another story for another day of what's in it.
There is now that you're saying that, there is actually, outside of that state, there is in OSHA, 1910-120, actually has a paragraph as to who qualifies to be an instructor for hazmat.
Really?
Yes. I'm going to find that.
Am I in there? Maybe I'm living a lie. It's
got your picture.
Well, while you're looking that up, So the bar was set for all of these weeks, and there are multiple modules within the hazmat curricula that needed certain criteria to be met. And I will say some of them were pretty easy, but a few of them were really, and when you start getting into the technician and specialist level, a lot of guys were like, whoa, I'm not even like... It demands a lot of experience and comfortableness with that content. So the pool to draw from is super, super small because of the criteria that you have to get to it.
Especially in like that category of that 1 week that you're specifically talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's say I have a guy that checks all the boxes, but he sucks as an instructor. Well, he checked all the boxes. Yeah, but he sucks as an instructor.
You know, when you're out there facing the unknown, you want the MX908 in your toolkit. Now, it's packed with the sensitivity and selectivity of high-pressure mass spectrometry. This is a detection device that fits right in your hands. You can detect and identify chemical targets from street drugs to explosives and ticks to chemical warfare agents, including Novichoks, all with the same tool. The MX908 can detect and identify threats in any state and is now the only field tool available for real-time aerosol analysis. The MX908 gives you the rapid, actionable intelligence you need to make decisions faster and ensure the safety of everybody involved. To get more information about the MX908, including technical papers, video demos, and target lists, go to info.908devices.com/hazmat, and then hazmat is all in one word. With the MX908, you get real-time detection of real-time threats. Check it out at info.908devices.com/hazmat.
How do you... All right, so did they address the suckiness of the instructor at all? Because I kind of feel like they did in this way of like, yeah, we read the evals. We know if you suck as an instructor, we're going to find out.
I think that's where the 80 hours of vouching from somebody else would kind of cover that whole thing up. But, you know, it's not a foolproof plan. What if the guy just, you know, throws the paperwork in front of the boss and says, here, sign this. I need this kind. And he goes, okay. And he just throws it in there.
Right. Like, I need you to teach. I'm just going to vouch for you. I don't really care.
Right.
So there is different levels of, I'm trying to find where we fit in specifically for employees, because I'm in paragraph Q of 1910-120, and some of the other programs have, training. first responder operations is in here, hazardous instructor. Because I just want to read it, because to see what the difference is from that national level to that local state level and that regulation. So trainers who teach any of the above training subjects, which was operations, technician, specialist, all that nine yards, which is something that I know that we've been saying where some of us work. Trainers who teach any of the above training subjects shall have satisfactory completion in the training of the course for which they are teaching, makes sense, and are expected to teach such courses, offered by the U.S. National Fire Academy, or they shall have training and or academic credentials and instructing experiences necessary to demonstrate competent instructional skills and a good command of the subject matter of the course they are teaching. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds almost like total nonsense.
Yes, yes. The National Fire Academy thing is an exemptor right there.
Right, like, what, just because I have a good sub, like, and this is OSHA, right? So this is the federal, right? In order to teach this and be, like, good with OSHA, you have to have a good command of the subject matter in the courses that they're teaching. But it's not, it doesn't give any, like, what does that mean? What is a good command of the subject matter? Who dictates that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Like, there's no bar. It's like a very...
There's no bar. Like, all right, prove it. Prove to me that you have good content. What do you... I guess you just have to wait for somebody to get hurt.
Well, that's on the other side. And then they turn around and... So, like, I have a guy that's not... doesn't have a bachelor's degree, and he had, but he's picked up. He's very astute. He's picked up all his stuff. He can speak intelligently with PhDs. He doesn't have a piece of paper. Who cares? The guy's the best instructor I've ever seen.
Yeah,
I don't care. Like, he still moves the ball a mile further or better than any of these other guys that have, I have a PhD. Awesome. It's great. You suck.
Yeah.
You suck as an instructor.
But you could see that lack of understanding in other parts of their regulations.
Yes.
And the way that certain courses are set up, where it's like, oh, they really emphasized like a chemistry knowledge that is well above what a responder really needs to know.
Right. And again, that's a story for another day. I really would like to come back around to that one and kind of hash it out. But they go into, now we're kind of generating into the actual classes, is that like they go into granular level stuff where you're talking about things like, you know, over the road, transport containers, et cetera. They go into like, you're going to demonstrate, you know, bungs. You're going to demonstrate wrenches. You're going to demonstrate chimes. You're going to demonstrate, like, holy crap. It was like 60 pages of things you're supposed to go through in 1 week. So like now we're getting to granular level stuff where it's like, all right, when is enough enough? Because you as an instructor, there's no way I can go through 600 different pieces in 1 week. So like,
yeah.
Now there's no flex, because if you go by the book, and I know nobody goes by the book, but lightning storm? Like, what if somebody gets hurt and I lose 6 hours? What if, you know, like things happen, man, and you gotta have some flexibility in those things. I didn't feel like it was a lot of flexibility.
No, there was no flexibility, but they tried to make it. They tried to say it was flexible, right? Like they tried to be like, no. Yeah. Look, we want you to teach how you teach. As long as you hit every single point.
Right. Which and it's use our like, PowerPoints.
It's kind of like, I mean, there's part of me that gets it. There's part of me that's like, yeah, because if somebody screws up, they need to be able to say this person was trained.
Right. To this competency. And that's how they get their legitimacy. And I totally get that.
I get it.
That's how Pro Board gives it to you.
Yes. Yeah. And as Pro Board starts to like make its way around, that is the whole basis, like standardized. We want it legit. And I'm not saying it's not legit. What I mean legit is like structure, rigor, structure.
Yeah.
Because, like, how do you teach a class like that? That every single person has to use a bunghole wrench?
No.
Like, I literally have to line everybody up and say, next, next, right. next, next.
At that point, next. It's not efficient.
It's not efficient. And then how do you get into scenario type training? Where is my thinking? How and where are the regulations for understanding the material?
Right.
And connecting the dots. Like, I can turn around and I can teach my son, who's 10 years old, to be a technician. He's not going to understand the right. deeper, you know, the connections and the dots. And I feel like the rigors of those regulations, they don't allow for dots to be connected.
Right. So, you know, to kind of wrap up the topic, I think the final crux and what was kind of like at the end, I was like, huh, is that we're really there to test. Like, testing was a big part of how all these classes are going to summarize is a written test to ensure competency. You know, you or us now, apparently, as the lead instructors or the master instructor, whatever, I don't remember what the term was, but we only teach or only have to teach up to 20% of the class. The rest of it can be done by adjunctions.
Yes. Which, yeah, that I was really, like, huh. I was really surprised with. So, and it kind of shows how they don't want to give flexibility to the instructors. Like, right. you are there to do administrative work.
But this is the cut around. So let's say, Mike doesn't have a degree. He is an incredible instructor. He is adept in chemistry. He doesn't have a degree. So he does not suffice for that requirement. I do have a degree. So I am the 20% guy. Mike does 80% of the teaching. Everybody walks out of there like, I got it, man. And I, because I have the criteria, I sink the class. I destroy it. His 80% pushes them over the line. They pass the grade. Everybody goes home. The 70, what do they call the guy that gets a 71? They call him a doctor.
Right.
He's in. He won.
He's in. He did it.
But it works. That's ridiculous. It should be anybody that steps in front of the class has either the criteria or doesn't.
Right. And has the responsibility of the administrative stuff.
Right. And then a lot of that was admin stuff. It was like, okay, test the test. If they screw up the test, if they write on the test has to be destroyed. You're going to call for another one. The shenanigans, you're going to call right. for another. That's cool.
You're right. The class should have been blah, blah, state certified examiner.
Right. I'm an examiner. It wasn't really certified. And they made us get up and do 5 to 15 minutes on some topic and, you know, deal with people that were,
Which, by the way, and I know I expressed this to Bob multiple times after that class. If you're going to take my time and put me in front of a class to teach 5 minutes worth of material that the class already knows because right. they're all technicians to begin with, please give me something back. Please give me feedback on how you thought my teaching style was,
did
what
I say
you thought I did wrong.
Times?
Right. Like, right. Give me something that I can take home and better myself. Do not have an instructor's class in which you see everybody teach for 5 minutes
right.
and give nothing back to that instructor.
I would like to get in videotaped. There's nothing more eye-opening than getting 5 minutes of yourself and you're like, oh my God, am I bad?
It was just, I mean, you cut the time in half and spend another 5 minutes critiquing that instructor.
Yeah, I would love that.
It's you want to have good instructors. You need to be shaping them.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was my biggest thing.
You know, so that kind of brought up the whole conversation here, and it comes up to, I would take a deep soul searching look at your department, your entity, or whatever it might be. Do you want to fall on the 100% regulated thing that we kind of just viewed? Or do you, and there's other departments that are such a flim-flam shop that, you know, like, hey, Joe drives and he just hit this this crane, you know, like, who taught Joe? Well, Frank did. Who taught Frank? Steve did. Who taught Steve? Well, Frank did. Like, what?
Right, wait.
There's no legitimacy at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, it's passed down.
And that's difficult, right? Because you can't have the very definition of structure is non-rigidity. But you can't have flexibility if you have structure. You can't have structure if you have flexibility.
There's got
to
be, yeah.
There has to be somewhere in the middle. Somewhere in the middle, you have to be able to account for instructing, teaching style, the type of instructor, what you actually want to, what's in your local area, like what is actually useful for that technician, what is actually useful for that class. If I go in and I create a program for where we work and, you know, I spend an entire day on chlorine rail car.
And there's no
class. That's a total waste, right? But I have to mention it and I have to talk about it to some degree according to NFPA and according to OSHA.
Well, this is where I think they're demanding two things, and they can't be both done at the same time. You either demand the best instructors and give them the flexibility in the course, or you design a tight course and you cannot get the best instructors.
Right. Because wouldn't that land on me? Like, wouldn't that land on my shoulders to if my class failed the test?
I would say.
Right. So shouldn't I be like, if I'm a good instructor and I have the textbook and the knowledge and the information, right? I have what they want to teach, on top of the fact that that 5-minute lecture was without PowerPoint.
Yes. And they were trying to be freestyle.
But you had to use their PowerPoint in your class.
Right.
So, right. Like, so if I ex-nay the PowerPoint, because of my teaching style, I'm technically in violation because I'm not using their slides.
Right.
But I will take that responsibility at the test day to be like, no, I covered all the material.
Right. I think it's a bigger question than me and you.
Yes, it is. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you are a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.